This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, Coach. How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, but we wanted to start with this because we just replayed for our audience your press gathering after the Rockets game on Wednesday night. And when you finished it by saying it was a call that an elementary school ref wouldn't make, I immediately wondered, do you know that when you're talking to us that one of us is actually an elementary school referee?
I had no idea.
Okay,
is that true?
Dan Dibley has been doing it for 35 years. So, Coach, the floor is yours. You talk to him.
Would you have made that call?
Steve, I wouldn't have, and I'll tell you why. I do 8 games in a day. I'm kind of the Zach Zarba of Marin County CYO.
Not nearly as good looking. Take it easy.
Well, you kind of jumped the bit because I'm both handsome and efficient with the whistle. But what I like to do, Steve, is I like to let the kids in this case, and I do a lot of 4th and 5th grade, I like to let the players decide it. And because I work alone, I don't have the opportunity to do what Mr. Kennedy and the crew should have done, which is huddle up, because he bursts in from the baseline with the fist. Meanwhile, the other two officials are looking at the play, doing exactly what the Dibber does up in the CYO. Is that where your frustration really stems from? The fact that, you know, Kennedy stole the call from the baseline while the other two were kind of letting it play out?
Well, you know, I said what I said after the game. Obviously, it was a disappointing finish. I just think in general those plays should not be called. I think Bill Kennedy's a great ref. He's a great guy, and I always feel bad after games criticize refs, because these guys have the hardest job in sports. I mean, other than being a quarterback in the NFL, I think they have the hardest job in sports. But you know, my issue is that there's got to be feel with officiating. It can't be black and white. This is, you know, I've said this before, this is not tennis where you go to Hawkeye, the ball's either in or out, and everybody agrees. You know, I mean, we could have an argument on every single call that happens, or non-call in a basketball game. So these guys have really difficult jobs. I acknowledge that, and I just think the NBA is best served, and all of basketball, including elementary basketball in Marin, you know, it's best served when there's some feel. Like, let's, you know, it's that's just not a call that should be made. And I'm going to leave it at that so I don't rack up any fines.
I appreciate it, Steve. And, you know, coaches in our league don't get fined. But if you need me to don the stripes and get out there when Dallas comes to town, I need to start stretching now so I can make it the full 48.
Well, I'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Coach, I will ask you this. I wonder if there anything that has sort of changed with your thought process on this. And I mean that with the view from 10,000 feet, because you told us last week that what you say in press conferences, you do think that out. That is somewhat strategic. And there has been at least three instances of discussing officiating in post-game press conferences. So why has it been more of a topic for you this year?
I'm not sure it has been more of a topic this year. I only really remember the Denver and this one. What was the other one?
I'm thinking of Memphis also.
I was a little upset that night. That's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, fair. I'm not saying it's unfair, but anyway.
No, like I said, it's I'll tell you this. I think the game is in a much better place than it was a year ago, where the players were just manipulating their way to the foul line. We've done a really good job. The league has of kind of eliminating that dynamic, and the game. I think the game is way better this year than it was a year ago, and so the one thing I say, the league is always trying to make it a better game, trying to improve the quality of the flow of the game, and I know that, you know, when I speak publicly, I am speaking to the league too, you know, and I think they know that, and I actually think that's somewhat appreciated, as long as you do it in a tactful way and you're not crushing people. I just think we're all kind of, you know, working towards a better game, and it's really hard because, as I said, the NBA, every single call, there's gray area on, and what I think is a foul, you're going to think it's not, depending on, you know, what side we're cheering for, what side we're on. So this is really difficult stuff.
Yeah, and you were mentioning the benefit that the game has gotten from refs kind of letting them play. And without being critical of the officials that night, do you think that the Rocket game maybe is too far in the other direction in terms of the allowance of physicality?
Yeah, I do think it got too physical in that game. And I thought, you know, and that was one of my comments afterwards was, if it's going to be that physical, then how can you possibly call that, you know, that play at the end? And so you want it to be consistent. That's the main thing. You want to know what's happening. But, you know, there's always, the league is always evolving, and the officiating is evolving with it. And as I said, I feel good about, you know, the league's handling of everything and how they want the game to go to a good place. And that changes from, you know, era to era, from year to year. And like I said, they do a good job of collaborating.
Steve Kerr with us, as he is every week, Willard and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Coach, I look at what is, and I wonder if you actually would use the word trend, but it feels like a little bit of a trend that you guys are having a hard time getting buckets in the final 2-3 minutes of games when the game is close. What do you see as to what is preventing the scoring down the stretch?
Well, I think Steph had great comments after the game. As always, he took accountability because that's what Steph does. You know, whether anything is his fault or not, he's always going to, stand up and say, hey, I take responsibility for this. But, he what he said was we have to be better organized. We have to get certain go-to sets. We have to really be comfortable with what we're doing with the personnel that we have. And I think he's dead on. And the beauty of Steph is that, you know, he's one of the only superstars in sports who can just say that so authentically, so genuinely, so non-threateningly to anybody. There's no controversy. Nobody's writing stories today or yesterday about, you know, Steph Curry calls out his coach. It's just genuine collaboration. It's the beauty of Steph. Along with lots of other stuff, but he is an incredible partner in all of this. And the reason I'm so confident that we are going to get through this is because we're going to collaborate. You know, today's practice was really dedicated to situational stuff and talking details on, you know, end of game actions and what we're trying to accomplish and who needs to be where. And I have a lot of accountability in that as the coach. I've got to make sure that that we are really efficient down the stretch in closing games. And so, you know, Steph and I are aware, Draymond's aware, you know, we have to do this together. We've got to figure it out, and that's the plan.
Looked like most of the offense was Steph and Draymond screen and rolls down the stretch in that Houston game. Is there more space for Jonathan Kuminga to get the ball and kind of create on his own late in games in crunch time spots?
Well, we saw that in the last Houston game at home when Steph and Draymond were out, and that was definitely a great option, and that can still be an option for sure. But you know, to be fair, like if we have Steph and Draymond on the floor, we're going to go to them. I mean, that's they are our best option. We know that they've run that pick and roll for a decade. They've won championships doing that. That's the best option. There are other options for sure. JK in that situation is an option. And there are other things we can do, but our bread and butter is going to be the pick and roll with Steph and Draymond. Everybody knows that. But we've got to do a better job of building the rhythm within it and making sure guys are in the right spots around them and then executing from there.
So, Steve, let's talk a little bit about Kuminga then with what you just said and the fact that you recently had a couple of games ago, right? Draymond to the bench and Jonathan into the starting spot. And it feels like the organization is sending the message that they want to at least feature him a little bit more. Is that true? And what have you said to him about what that move means?
Yeah, that we are giving him more opportunity for sure, and that's the plan. You know, I mean, I think you guys are well aware. I mean, we've been experimenting with we've had 13 different starting lineups this year, and the tricky part of all this to get cut right to the chase is, you know, Draymond's best as a four. And if Draymond's the four, it's hard to play JK at the three. And so, you know, in order to maximize JK, you have to slide Draymond to the five to give JK the space that he needs. And that means we're taking Draymond out of position. So we're experimenting with all of this. And it's not easy. It doesn't just fit hand in glove to be able to accomplish both. And so that's part of what we're experimenting with. And that's part of what we're looking at with different lineups.
And does that directly or indirectly affect Trayce Jackson-Davis, who started a bunch at five early and then Loon came in, and now TJD had a game where he didn't even play at all? Is it just a case of rotations, or is TJD kind of struggling here in year two?
No, Trayce is playing great. In fact, I thought he was really good the other night. I didn't play him the previous game against Minnesota, but last game clearly presented a need for him because of their switching defense and their athleticism. We needed his finishing ability, and he got a couple buckets inside in that first half that were important for us. Running the floor was important for us. So it's just the domino effect of, JK playing the four, Draymond playing the five, that leaves fewer minutes for Loon and Trayce. And sometimes it's one or the other. And we have to sort through all that. We also have to sort through, what does it mean for Draymond playing the five heavy minutes? I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot, to have to battle Şengün down there, all game on the low block, and then handle more responsibility, offensively as the guy at the top of the floor, running the dribble handoffs and the pick and rolls. It's exhausting doing all of that. And so these are all factors that we talk about every day organizationally and what it means.
Steve, any silver lining to the loss the other night in that it creates a home environment over this weekend, more rest, no chance of that extra game that's not in the standings? Has that thought even crossed your mind a little bit?
Yeah, but it's overwhelmed by the anger that comes from not being in Las Vegas playing in the NBA Cup tomorrow. I mean, we were dying to win that thing, and we were, I thought we played well enough to win. We didn't play great in Houston, obviously, but we battled and played really well defensively and should have closed that game out. And so that makes us pretty angry. Now, the flip side, You're right. We have one game in the next week. We'll have today we practiced. We'll have three more practices in the next like 5-6 days. That's almost unheard of. So we have a chance to really confront, you know, some of the issues that have been holding us back and have kept us from winning some of these close games.
Quick aside, Steve, when you go to Vegas, are you a gambler? And if so, what's your table game that you prefer?
I used to be. I used to love to play blackjack, and now I'm an old man. I don't even bother going to the tables. I go right to the room and go to sleep at about 8:30.
I will let you
know,
Steve.
That's not a fun answer, Steve.
But I just so you know, I go to those tables still sometimes when I'm there, and there are plenty of old men there.
All right, old boring. I'm an old boring man.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah. I mean, do you want to weigh in on what to do when you have 16 and the dealer has a 10 showing? How do you handle it?
Oh, hit every time.
Every time?
Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, you know, if you haven't seen any face cards in a while, you might hold off. But I'm generally a let's go for it guy.
Love that. Yeah. Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibbs, as he is every single week. Okay, what about Clay coming back again this weekend, and emotionally how that might compare to the first time that he came back?
No hats for Clay this week.
Yeah,
no hats.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're always going to look forward to seeing Clay for sure. So we're excited to see him, but it's good to have the emotion of the first game behind us.
No doubt. And, you know, part of the fun of the NBA season for us anyway is to talk about the what if, and part of that is the trade rumors that are constantly swirling. Without addressing any of the ongoing machinations that are out there, as a coach, is it something that you find distracting, or is it something that you even address at all with the team privately or collectively as we get closer to trade season?
It gets to be a little bit of a distraction in February, but really at this point, there's nothing. I know there's plenty of rumors and all that stuff, but as far as being a distraction for the team or me, you know, addressing anything, I don't say anything until February when it gets real. So it's not an issue.
Steve, how's Andrew Wiggins doing?
He's feeling pretty well. He'll be questionable for Sunday. We had a light practice today that he took part in, but it was mostly walkthrough and shooting and kind of 5-on-0 stuff. So we'll see how he's doing. I mean, if we feel like it makes sense to give him, you know, that Sunday off, because that'll mean a whole, you know, week or 9 days rest, then we'll do that. But that'll be up to the training staff.
Pods has kind of had an up and down year, and especially scoring the basketball, but everything else in his game has been pretty rock solid. Where is he at right now in his year two development, especially when it comes to his outside shot?
Well, the shot's starting to fall a little bit more, as you can see, and that's exactly what I expected. You know, he's a good shooter, and I think over the course of his career, he's going to shoot a good percentage. I think Brandon is a hell of a player. He's tough. He's physical. He's someone who we really trust, you know, with the game on the line. I had him inbound the ball the other night at the end of the game because I know he's going to make a good decision. I think Brandon is in a typical place for a second-year guy where he's still figuring out who he is as a player and, you know, his place on the team, his place in the league. That takes time. You know, you have to experiment. You have to take risks. You have to make mistakes. And so he's going through all of that stuff and, you know, kind of processing where he is and what kind of player he's going to be.
Steve, this is totally off subject, but we wanted to ask you, and if memory and the internet serve correctly, famously when Scottie Pippen wouldn't go into a playoff game there at the end when a play was being drawn up for Tony Kukoc, you were on that team, right?
I was, yeah.
What do you remember about that night?
I remember that Phil Jackson walked into the locker room and basically addressed the team briefly, and he said, Bill Cartwright is going to address you guys. Bill was in his 16th year, I think, one of our captains, and Bill addressed it, and it was one of the most powerful moments I've ever experienced, because Scotty was a champion and beloved and, you know, everybody's favorite teammate, and he just kind of lost his mind for a second, and it was a bizarre moment. I think Scotty had so much equity that we forgave him, because we knew who he was, what kind of heart he had, what kind of competitor he was. We recognized the fact that he frankly just kind of, you know, lost his cool and made a huge mistake.
So, Steve, the reason I'm asking, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but the 49ers last night in Thursday Night Football had one of their linebackers just walk off the field and tell the coaches he did not feel like playing when there were other linebackers playing through injury out on the field and others who had been knocked out of the game and they really needed him. So that's kind of why the subject is fresh for us. And we as fans and media are sort of working through what that does to a teammate when one of your teammates won't go in there for their brothers. So thought it'd be interesting to get your reaction to that.
Yeah, I just think that so much of it is based on, you know, the player's history with the team. You know, if in our case with Scottie Pippen, we knew what Scottie was about, and we recognized it was just an awful mistake, but one that we were willing to forgive because of who he was and what he had meant to the team and what kind of teammate he had been his entire career. So I just think it's one thing if it's, you know, a one-time deal, a guy had a bad night, you know, having a bad day at home, whatever, or is it a pattern? Is it a, you know, so, you know, that, so it's really up to every team to figure that stuff out.
All right. So Steve, just to recap, no issue with elementary school refs, right?
No, actually, I'm a big fan because I hear they let the kids play ball.
Yeah, Steven, if you want to come out and vent, if you're feeling any frustration, I'll be at St. Vincent's in Marinwood every Saturday in January and February. I'll give you a good seat down low, and you can just let it rip,
yeah,
Steve.
We got good tickets, yeah.
I'm going to come out and heckle you so bad. It's going to be so fun.
Oh, my gosh. Wait. Coach, if you actually do, please.
Oh, my God.
Please. I will, I don't know, whatever I don't even know what I could do for you, but I'm willing to negotiate that if you would do that.
Just to get you ready, I call traveling about as often as the NBA refs do, so don't ask for a travel call because we don't believe in traveling in the fourth grade.
I'll tell you what I can offer, Coach. I'll make swordfish stir fry for you.
There you
on
go.
Me.
I can do that on my own.
That's a good point. All right, I'll keep trying. Thank you, Coach.
All right, Steve.